First Baptist Church of Redmond, August 8, 2021, Ecclesiastes Chapter 5, God's Gift.
Join me in reading Ecclesiastes 5:18. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting: to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labor in which he labors under the sun, during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. Amen.
You know, Katie has gone to church at Grace Community Church, John MacArthur's church, for many years. Her parents still go there, but they appreciate the loss of their daughter because she's moving up here. I'm saying this because you think that mega churches would sing different songs, but the same three songs we began with were the same three songs Grace Community had on Sunday. So they sing normal hymns. Yes. God's Gift. I've titled the sermon, God's Gift. Coleman Mockler, you might not have heard of him, but he's considered today as the model of an effective CEO. A Harvard Business School graduate with the MBA, he had gone to work for Gillette Corporation and steadily worked his way up the ladder to CEO. Although Gillette was 75 years old, Coleman took the company to new heights of success. Under his management, they came to dominate the market. After 16 years as CEO, Coleman was at the top of the world. Forbes magazine had just put him on the cover of his the next issue, celebrating his leadership and success. The magazine wouldn't hit the newsstands for another week, but on the morning of January 25th, 1991, that's dated February 4, 1991, they had sent him an advance copy to review. The rest of the executives literally applauded him as he carried the magazine back to his office. In so many ways, it was a fantastically good day for Coleman. Decades of hard work had brought him to this point. He had beaten back three hostile takeover bids and revolutionized the company. He had increased the value of the stock 50-fold. He was literally celebrated on the cover of the business world. And with millions in the bank, he had just announced that he would be retiring in a few months. But there was one thing that made it an unexpectedly tragic day. With the staff applauding, Coleman walked down the hall, stepped to his office, shut the door, and crumpled to the floor. Within moments, he was dead of a massive heart attack, still clutching the Forbes magazine that featured him on the cover. There was a sickening evil which I have seen under the sun: wealth being hoarded by its owner to his detriment. Money. What's the purpose of money? What's money for? It may be here today, but it will be gone tomorrow. The preacher, who is Solomon, calls this a grievous evil, which literally means it makes him sick to even think about it. Martin Luther said, God permits the very riches in which people trust to bring about the ruin of those who own them. Money will buy, but bed but not sleep. books but not brains, food but not appetite, finery but not beauty, house but not a home, medicine but not health, luxuries but not culture, amusements but not happiness, religious but not salvation, and a passport to everywhere but heaven. When that wealth was lost through bad business and he had fathered a son, then there was nothing to support him. Even worse, the man was now a father and he had nothing to leave his son. And financial planning for the future, we should not only think of ourselves, but also what we can give to our families, including our spiritual family in church. Fathers and mothers have a duty to save and sacrifice for their sons and daughters, yet this does not mean that getting and keeping more money should be our primary focus. Just the opposite. The whole point of the story is that counting on money is vanity and striving after wind. As he came naked from his mother's womb, so he'll return as he came. He will take nothing from the fruit of his labor that he can carry in his hand. The rabbis taught that a baby comes into this world with clenched fists in order that he can learn to grab all he can. Conversely, a person leaves this world with open palms, not able to carry anything out of this world. Really, what can we take with us? I need some help. I need to go back a slide. I clicked too soon. Thank you. Hooray. Former heavyweight boxing champion George Foreman, in his book, God in My Corner, explains how money couldn't buy him happiness. He writes, "Before I met God, my attitude was about as bad as it could get. Even when everything was going well for me, I couldn't see it. And I didn't appreciate it. When Muhammad Ali fought me for the heavyweight championship of the world, I received a $5 million paycheck. That purse was astronomical in those days and would have been worth many times more that amount in today's dollars. No fighters have ever been so well paid in the history of boxing. You'd think that being a multimillionaire would bring instant joy to my soul. It didn't. Because I lost the boxing match, I couldn't enjoy my money. I had $5 million in the bank, but couldn't find pleasure in even one penny of it. I chose to see the worst in my situation, and my stomach was tied up in knots as well. My sour attitude caused me to sink into deep depression, even though I was filthy rich. $5 million could buy me anything I wanted, except happiness." This is also a sickening evil, exactly as a person is born, so will he die. What is then the advantage for him who labors after the wind? The Apostle Paul took the same truth and applied it to all of us. We brought nothing into this world, and we cannot take anything out of this world. Martin Luther said, "As I shall forsake my riches when I die, so I forsake them while I am living." What's the point? What is Martin Luther saying? This is the audience participation part of the show. Martin Luther says, as I shall forsake my riches when I die, so I forsake them while I'm living. What's the point? What? Don't keep them. Don't live for them. Because they're deceitful, but you shouldn't trust in money. All his life, he also eats in darkness with great irritation, sickness, and anger. Solomon summarizes the many reasons not to live for money in verse 17. This first gives us a pathetic picture of where greed will lead. Derek Kidner says, if anything is worse than the addiction money brings, it is the emptiness it leaves. He also will be very angry, a bitter old man. Who has heard of a happy miser? Yes? No. People who live for money try to hold on to as much of it as they can. But when they have to let it go, as everyone does eventually, it makes them angry with everyone and everything. When you get angry, what is the reason? I've heard it said that when you get angry, it's supposed to be a sign, an indication that your rights have been violated. What you're angry about means, how have I been offended? How have I been wronged? I didn't get what I deserved. When husbands and wives have arguments about how much to spend, for example, and want to spend it on, are they disagreeing about the principles of biblical stewardship? Are they really fighting for what they want to have? That unsatisfied desire for worldly possessions is one powerful producer of anger. But faith in God changes everything. The last three verses of our passage, Solomon comes up for air, and he gives three reasons for blessing. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting: to eat, drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labors in which he labors under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him. For this is his reward. All is not doom and gloom. The wealthy King Solomon, only a rich man could write this. The wealthy King Solomon smiles as he lifts three gifts which he says are good and fitting. These gifts are so valuable, money cannot buy them. Claim the gift of enjoyment in your life. Solomon encourages us to refuse to attach ourselves to the dollar sign alone. We should eat, drink, and notice what we're doing along the way. Brittany and Barbara watch like a hawk what I eat. I asked Brittany to make a few more carbs for dinner than I was supposed to. By the way, I am limited to 60 carbs a meal. Yeah, 60 carbs. That's not even half a box of Kraft macaroni and cheese. But I could be thankful for salad. Yes? I don't want to be thankful for salad. But I'm thankful for salad more than ever before. Did you know that there's no carbohydrates in a hamburger? Yes. So I've been eating microwave hamburgers. Notice the blessings you get to enjoy. A walk in the park, a drive in the country, and if you watch a show, and did you notice that the U.S. beat other countries in gold medals? Yes? Ha ha. Eat and drink and notice what you're doing along the way. Laugh more. Find pleasure in simple things. Recently, I posted a meme on Facebook. It was of a turtle on its back, and that's how I find myself. Was the caption, how I get out of bed. And that's literally how I get out of bed in the morning, because I'm sleeping on the famous green couch. And it's comfortable to sleep, but I need something that is higher because I have to stand to fit my walker. So I'm literally like that turtle because I have to go in motion to stand. And it can take me two or three or four times to make a motion to stand. But I have to sit down and laugh at myself because of my situation. Furthermore, as for every person to whom God has given riches and wealth, he has given him the opportunity to enjoy them and receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. Claim the gift of fulfillment in your work. You may not be happy with where you work. They might take advantage of you, and you might be doing something you hate, but experiment with me. Share with me. Is there anything you look forward to in your job? And tell me about it. Tell one thing that you enjoy with your job. Yes. He enjoys his workmates. Somebody else. Yes. Enjoying your teammates. Yes. Customer contact. Somebody else. The smiles on students' faces. Is there something else? No? I noticed nobody from campus spoke up. There's so many, you can't pick one else. Yes, yes, okay. It's not always true that there's a better job around the corner. It's just different. You can make another choice. You can have another job. But I hope you find that you're satisfied and find some happiness, because it's important to like where you work. I've had jobs before, and I didn't like them, and I tried to change them, but it made it more tolerable if I, like you, like my coworkers, if I like my boss. And I had a terrible job for 9 years. I came home dirty and sweaty, and greasy, but I like my workers, co-workers. So it made me like the job. Invest more in the vertical dimension as well as the horizontal. Invest in God's glory. Do things that are praiseworthy to God. Do things that God is happy with. And do things that enable you to have the opportunity to give God thanks, give God praise, and talk about God. And give generously. For he will not often call to mind the years of his life, because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. Claim the gift of contentment in your work, in your heart. You might find that you're alone more than you plan to be. You might find that you're growing older. You're now sidelined on a shelf. Believe it or not, God is there. You can find God. You can seek God. God is with you, Emmanuel, God with us. And somehow, some way, God is in your situation. God, therefore, can give you contentment. For us, I want you to notice the old quote, thousands of years old, from Seneca the Younger. Money has never yet made anyone rich. Think about it. Money has never yet made anyone rich. How are things going inside yourself? Are you at peace? What part of you is insecure and fearful? Deep down, does anything within you make you smile? For real riches, try switching kingdoms. The kingdom of God is at hand. Chuck Bentley, CEO of Crown Financial Ministries, has written, "Living only to acquire more is a foolish proposition." The story of a dear friend's father brings this point home in a profound way. My friend grew up in a modest home with a father who worked diligently to provide for his family. Over the years, he worked long days and most evenings. His business required him to have appointments with potential clients after most people had finished their workday. Early in the father's career, he purchased a simple, small lot overlooking a beautiful lake. To avoid extravagance, he moved into a simple mobile home on the lot and had a deck installed around it so he could sit and watch the sunset. The family spent most weekends together at the lake as the children were growing up. Over the years, the small business grew, and so did the man's and his time. He spent less time with the family as mergers and acquisition increased the company size. The children began to be consider him distant and uninvolved in their lives. Still, he continued his relentless accumulation of more and more assets. Ultimately, his company was acquired by a major company. This landed this picture on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, but then disaster struck. He had traveled so very far up the ladder of financial success to learn shortly thereafter he had a rare disease that would take his life in a matter of weeks. Before my friend's father died, he uttered heartfelt words symbolizing the vanity of all he had acquired. Quote, "I was happiest when sitting on the deck outside the trailer, watching the sun set on the lake. I never needed any more than that."